We welcome you tonight, and we're glad you're here. You know, usually Friday night is a teaching night. Nita is teaching us and guiding us and so forth, and this is also a teaching night, but the subject's a little bit different. We're talking about emergency preparedness, and we are so glad you're here. The Lord was speaking to me something tonight that I don't even have in my notes, and he said this: do not treat tonight what you're going to hear as entertainment. We're past the point of entertainment, folks. There is a need for not only spiritual preparation, but physical and personal preparation. And as we observed what was happening with Hurricane Sandy this week, and seeing the news, watching videos, and so forth, you begin to feel what disasters can and may occur and how they can propagate, the need for individual and family preparedness. We sometimes have short seasons here in the Seattle area that last a day or two, and most every time everybody gets through it pretty well. But the times that you go and you do see the shelves bare in the grocery store, and you do see the lack of lights or batteries at Home Depot, I want you to multiply that thought in terms of, that's one, maybe a 1, 2, or 3 day situation. What if it were multiple situations? Those batteries won't be there. That food won't be there. What have you done to prepare yourselves? And that's why I say, I think the Lord is speaking to us tonight to say, do not treat this as entertainment. If you do one thing tonight as a result of the teaching, that is start. Do something to help yourself and help your family. Tonight, our speaker is going to show you how easy and simple it is to begin the process of personal and family preparation for disasters that could occur here in our state or in our city. The worst situation in a disaster is to be reactive as opposed to being proactive. No one can predict a disaster or an emergency type of event. They're normally not predictable. So I want to ask my wife, Lynn, she's done a lot of the coordination on this, to come up and introduce our speaker tonight. And we'll have some things to share as we go along a little bit later. So, Lynn.
We are blessed tonight to have a professional with us who has a lot of experience in not only emergency preparedness, but in training citizens to be prepared. And she came to our attention because she's part of Joel's Army. She is a prayer cell leader in Georgia, and she is retired from the Red Cross, where she began training in disaster response in 1991. She was a disaster chairman and was responsible for recruiting, training, coordinating, and leading the response in a multi-county area. She held a staffing officer position with the Georgia Hurricane Watch Team, responded to national disasters, and attained officer rank in those functions of training and serving. She also conducted disaster preparedness classes throughout a 6-county area of Metro Atlanta. And she's a citizen emergency relief team trainer. I'm going to tell you a few things about our guest, Linda Hayes, that she may not tell you about herself. Linda holds 2 master's degrees, one in education with a specialty in administration and instructional leadership, and a second master's degree in business administration for public and private management. She is highly qualified in all areas, and in addition, she is a house church pastor. She and her husband, Dick, founded a ministry called Herald Ministries in 1978 and served as missionaries to Haiti for 2 years. Right now, we are blessed to have Linda with us, not only for all of her experience and educational background that I've shared with you, but because she is a Bible teacher and she is an intercessory leader who hears from the Lord. So she's bringing us insights that we might not normally hear in a civilian type of setting for disaster training. I'd like you to welcome Linda Hayes.
Greetings from Georgia. I am so glad to be here, and I so appreciate Nita inviting me and Lynn and Don hosting me in their lovely home. When this got set up, I had no idea that they were so involved in personal disaster preparedness themselves. Don's talked to his many of his counterparts at Honeywell. Oh, computers. My husband's in computers, too. But the reason people start preparing is because somebody brought the subject up. It just doesn't come floating in the air. Somebody talks about it. So what we're going to believe God for today is that we're going to believe Him to give us the mindset that will help us get started, as Don said, but to be that agency in our community that leads others. If we hear it, we'll do it, and then we're going to be teaching it. If it's just to our kids and grandkids. Let me ask you this. How many of you have a disaster preparedness kit already prepared and either in your car or real close to the front door right now? Why? Why do you have them? Yeah, in case. Okay, am I getting an echo? I am from me. So just check it out and see if I'm reverberating. I'm fine from you all standpoint. I live on a beautiful hill, 300 feet from the road, a nice winding driveway. I overlook pastures and farmland, and I have the woods in the back. And I'm in pretty good position if something should happen. When you live in Seattle, you face a very complex array of possible disasters. I did some research on Seattle. I discovered that you are surrounded by water, and you travel mainly by bridges and elevated highways. Your water has to cross these expanses of liquid to get it to you. A lot of your downtown area is on unstable land. I don't know whether you knew this, but there's something called soil liquefaction. That means it doesn't stay solid in circumstances. And those circumstances are the type that you will experience with even a mild earthquake or just a really high tide or even a minor tsunami. It comes in and changes the ground that we walk on into something that's unstable. Well, if you've built on that, what do you think is going to happen? tilt, you know, and if you're three stories, five stories, 10 stories up, you're going to tilt with it. So these are challenges. You happen to be sitting on three faults. You have a couple of volcanoes that could erupt, and an offshore earthquake could trigger a tsunami. I'd say that Seattle needs to be prepared. Yeah. Next slide. When I started thinking about preparedness, now I have been thinking about starting a blog that addressed these issues for a long time. But until I got the invitation from Nita, I didn't do anything. Inertia is a wonderful thing. You just sit until something propels you. Well, it was Nita that propelled me to get it started. So I started a blog. It has three items on it. You will be getting handouts tonight, and though that blog has three items on it, I promise you it will grow and improve. Just as soon as somebody teaches me, I'll have pictures and pretty stuff on it. Right now, it's just plain vanilla. But it does have the handouts you will be getting tonight. And so don't worry about keeping up with any of this or writing it down, because you'll be able to pick up the main ideas in a little bit. But I named my blog, after a lot of prayer, The Way of Prudence. And I looked up, go back to prudence. Can we hit the, yeah. In the dictionary, prudence means wisely cautious in practical affairs, wisdom, good judgment, careful of one's interest, provident care in management, frugality, careful in providing for the future. Now, when God gave me that, I did not know that that's what prudent meant. Looking it up made me think, okay, God, you knew what you were doing when you said to come up with a blog that said The Ways of Prudence. Your preparedness is going to be a journey. It's just starting, and then you're going to be expanding it. And so what we're going to believe, that God shows us how to walk this journey so that we can be the salt and the light. And it looks like the darkness is coming, and we need to be sure that we shine. So just let's set ourselves in agreement that in Jesus' name, we're going to be receptive to his voice, his instruction. Because what those of us who are my age have a birthday this week or coming up, and it's a little bit of a shock. You don't realize just how old you're getting. But my circumstances have changed. I don't have little ones at home. But some of you do have little ones at home. Some of you have children that are in college. So we're going to not only have to learn for ourselves, we're going to have to learn for the sake of our parent, of our children, and some are going to have to learn for the sake of their parents, because many of us are living a whole lot older, you know, longer, and yeah, you know what I'm talking about, and we like our independence, but we may not have the ability as we get older to do the things you younger ones have. So just keep it in mind that this isn't just for us, that we live in community and we live in families. So our responsibility for walking out the light of the Lord in practical manners is the key to this. We're not just getting for us. We're getting because God has a mandate for us to live out his life. And his life, there's no lack, you all. Do you know that in Christ, we don't have lack, and so we may have a different lifestyle, but God's going to show us how to prepare for it and deal with it so that we don't suffer. I hate the word sluggard. Do y'all hate the word sluggard? Yeah, I wasn't going to say that. I'm really mad that God brought that up. But you all, we can't be sluggards in this. If we are, we're gonna suffer a real hard, possibly life-threatening consequence. So if you will just set yourself in agreement with me that the things that I share and that we talk about are going to get us off the couch and get us into some sort of activity that produces for us. Are you all going to be in agreement with that? Are we okay? Okay, good. I just don't want to be sure. If you will, go ahead and give me the next slide. You're going to notice that I have had all this disaster experience. Lynn read a bunch of it. I mean, you know, it looks impressive. Next slide. Wow, gets better, doesn't it? I'm even a member of our local ministerial association. I said, you know, we community people, you know, we need to get together and prepare for emergencies. We need to have a plan in place so that if there's something that happened, that it is the Church of Jesus Christ that responds. Guess how much affirmative action I got? Okay, so then I went to the Baptist Association, two county Baptist associations, and I offered in my generous manner, I will come to your church and teach disaster preparedness. Free. Free. Won't cost you anything. I'll even provide the handouts. Free. Two county association. Guess how many takers? Again. Zero. So, just because you're prepared, just because you've trained, it doesn't mean people are really excited about what you do and what you know. Y'all are the first people that even have cared. I've done it in small groups all over the place, but this is the first time a church has said, I want to be prepared myself, and then I want to know what to do in times of disaster for the sake of the kingdom. But I want you to look at the last line. A former Girl Scout leader. The Boy Scouts are always prepared, but let me tell you what. I started out as a Brownie. My mother was my leader a good bit of the time. Went through cadets, went through senior scouting, and then I moved home and I had little ones, and I ended up being my sister's scout leader and then my children's scout leaders. Do you know that when you go camping and hiking, if you don't pack it, you can't use it? Guess how I learned how important a can opener was? Yes. Fortunately, other people remembered theirs. So this is where you learn these things in life. What scouting did for me was give me the mindset of contingency thinking. I'll just give you another example. Our scout leader said, you know, it could rain. Maybe you better dig a ditch around your tent. Not gonna rain. Oh, and we had this stupid little shovel that, you know, it would maybe that much, you know. And we thought, oh, it's not gonna rain. Let me tell you what. Wet sleeping bags are not fun. They're not fun. And nobody would let us into their tents. It was a ripoff here. But I learned that just because it's hard work, just because it's inconvenient, that maybe prudence is smart. And y'all may think, you know, look how old you are, Linda. That had to have been a very long time ago. Yes, it was. I remember it. I mean, it was icky. It was just And I kept thinking, God, I will never do that again. I will always be prepared. Well, you know how far that went. But it did teach me that preparedness comes at a price. It takes effort, and you're going to find out very shortly it takes money. And then you have to convince the other family members, this is a good thing. We need a generator. And how much does a generator cost? So there's going to be some adjustments in the way we live for this. And we're going to set ourselves right now in agreement that we're not going to get into fear. We're not going to get into worry. We're not going to get into anxiety. But we're going to hear from God and begin making a plan. And this is what all this is about. Next slide. All right. What Father told me was to tell you all that I can become your best friend. If you've got questions that we don't get answered here, you've got my email. It's on your handouts. Write me, and what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be setting up sort of an email bulletin list, and as things come up or people ask questions, I'll send out the answers. I don't say I know them, but I'll find them out. But the blog is going to be the way we communicate with one another. I will be putting up the things that we don't get covered here tonight. I will be putting up information on really, really good bargains. You don't need to copy it down. This is going to be, you know, on your handouts. Next slide. If you all walk out of here with a contingency mindset, then we will have accomplished everything. What you're going to do is to realize that you usually don't have just one factor in an emergency or disaster. You've got the first one that produces the second one that produces the third one, and then you look behind and you think, oh no, here comes the fourth one. You've got to be able to be flexible. And the biggest thing that we have going for us that the world doesn't have is we've got the mind of Christ. We've got Holy Spirit within us to tell us when, where, how. And so, y'all, we can do this without fear. Next slide. In my blog, I'm going to be encouraging you all to send in the good stuff you found. And if it's okay with you, we'll just publish it. All right? I mean, I don't know everything. My kids would say, you know, I can't roll my eyes like every one of my children can. I think it's because if I had tried it with my mother, I would have been knocked across the room. So, I mean, I can't, but seriously, I need you, you need me, we need each other. And so together we're going to be able to build on what we've learned. There is no point in us reinventing one wheel. If you know it and you know it, let's share it. So this is what this is all about. If you went to my blog tonight, you would find three lists and one little bit of scripture. That's it. I did it at Don's desk yesterday because I didn't have time. I promise you, the glitz and the glitter and the bells and whistles will be all put in there just as soon as my daughter-in-law teaches me how to do it. And so I don't have it yet, but the information will come and I can pretty it up as I learn. Next slide. We're going to prepare for disaster God's way. The world sees preparedness as these wild-eyed, bushy-beard, suspender-popping, rifle-carrying, really weird people. Weird. you know, they learn how to eat bugs and things, you know. We're not going to do that tonight. If you want to and you cook them up and you find they're good, put them on the blog and we'll all share. But I'll let you experiment with it. So God's got a way for his kids. He has a way. This situation we're in our country, the uncertain times, doesn't catch him by surprise. He knows what we're about to go through. He has a way of escape, you all. We got to count on that. We have to know that he's got a way. And if we focus on God, then he's going to lead us and guide us in a way that honors him and exalts his kingdom. Next slide. I'm going to just go through some potential disasters. Fire. You notice it's in red. It is the number one disaster in all of the United States. Single family fires are the most devastating of anything we face. So we think we're prepared for that, but most of us really, really aren't. And so I'm going to cover that in a minute. But just keep in mind that fire is something that you may not be able to prevent, but you can prepare for it and respond in such a way that your life can be saved. Then we've got the major storms, rain, hurricane, snow, ice, and God had me add dust. Do you remember the story of the Dust Bowl years and years ago? A drought happened, and the ground just blew away. We haven't seen that yet, except in very, you know, rare occasions. Next slide. But drought, if it prolongs, is going to end up producing dust storms. The other thing drought may end up doing is the next thing, power outage. A lot of our electric producing dams depend on a certain amount of water going through those turbines. Drought has played havoc on the power. And we may find that there's some major adjustments in some areas of the country. Power outages tend to be short duration with storms and everything else. Y'all, we can live through a power outage. We got a handy-dandy flashlight. Even have a candle or two. And we can eat peanut butter and jelly. We don't have to cook. But the next one isn't short, and that's electric grid failure. The electric grid is like neon to terrorists. We are very susceptible to major electric grid failure. And my recent studies indicated that this isn't a quick fix. We don't have the parts and the equipment stockpiled to repair all the systems. So I'm just here to tell you that if there is a major grid failure, Seattle will get the electricity before my little rural house will. It'll go to the cities. And so my challenge in my area is to go without electricity a whole lot longer than you all will, because it will go to the cities first, because look, you've got the concentration. So, but just keep in mind, this is a possibility. We've got flooding. We saw what happened in Sandy. And we've got tornadoes. Next slide. I don't know if you're noticing this, but these disasters are getting progressively more uncomfortable. A hazardous material incident. It could be a dirty bomb. It's not like an atomic explosion, but it's enough to mess things up. It could be an overturned tanker truck. This is a major, major, I'm going to trip over this. Let me get it moved. Major concern. And so I'm not going to go into it, but just keep in mind that as you start researching, there are ways to respond to all of this. I've talked about the land liquefaction. That's a new word for me, and it's not coming off. Volcano, tsunami. Again, those are things that your disaster preparedness people in the state and in the city have some information on. I'm not going to go into it because there are rare ones. But I want the next slide. Look at the list. I don't even want to think about this. I have absolutely no idea how to respond. None of us do. This is not part of disaster preparedness. We deal with tornadoes and floods and hurricanes. We don't deal with this stuff. But this is part of what Nita's been talking about concerning judgment. It's the reason we've been praying, the reason we've been repenting, is that these consequences of deep, deep sin in our land don't happen. We had 9/11, and you all, that was about as much as our minds took. And as disastrous and as horrible as it was, y'all, it only took two buildings. It was a very small disaster in the light of things that could happen. I served in 9/11, not in New York. I served in Washington, D.C., where it took the Pentagon out. And I was there a month. And y'all, the damage that it did to the Pentagon, the damage that it did to the community, I saw firsthand. I don't know about New York, but I saw the soberness that it created in people. But for the most part, your life went on just as it always has. It only affected a small number of people. But with some of this, we're going to find that it's going to affect more. As I was meditating on this, God said one of the possibilities we face is that we could be dealing with some of these simultaneously. Now remember, we're not going to get in fear. We're just going to respond. Next slide. You have this in your handouts, but the first response to disaster preparedness is having a plan. Let me ask you, I'd like to see your hands. Who has a disaster plan that they have developed and written down and talked about? Who's done it? Oh, my heavens. We got some work to do. Thank God for those that have it. Most of us don't, including me. I have pieces and parts of it, but it's not written down. It's not thought about. So I just want to go through. These are the first things. This is what you start with first. If you don't have a weather alert system in your community, how many of you, when a storm has been predicted, will get a buzz on your cell phone? Anybody in here? Okay. The rest of you need to register. Y'all, this is a life-saving provision that our government has given. All you do is call the emergency management people or whoever does it in your area, give them your phone numbers, and if you've got a tornado coming, if you've got high winds, they will buzz you. And if you've got a smartphone, Even though you've turned the phone off, it will still buzz. It overrides it. It is a 911 situation. So get this, make this a priority. Go ahead and register for that phone warning. The other thing is that, do you know what sirens say to you when they go off? How many of you heard a siren? Okay, does your community do it we do it every first Wednesday. You hear it every first Wednesday? They don't test the sirens? How do you know you'll hear it if you need it? On the TV, but I could be outside. I don't have a TV on. In fact, if my husband has to call me and says, Linda, there's a tornado coming. This was before I was registered. And so in most communities nowadays, those sirens, when they go off, what they mean is you who heard the siren are in danger. I'm not going to have the siren go off in my area if it's a county away. It means me. And so check with it. You need to know what your sirens are telling you. We practice it every first Wednesday at noon. Now, some people live in areas that do not have sirens. But I lived in Alabama when we had all these horrible, horrible tornadoes and no sirens. Y'all, the loss of life wasn't good. Those sirens go off in time for you to get to shelter. And people died. People died. And praise God, that has changed. We got some federal money, and we were able to install them. So please check that out in your community. You know, you need to know, you know, what to do. And your children need to know how to respond also. So just keep in mind that it's not just you. You need to work on that. The other thing is that in Seattle, emergency management people have done such a wonderful job. They have a map of this entire area, and everybody that has a serious handicap or illness or is on life support is listed. Every address. So if something comes up, they know who needs help right then. They're not going to be able to help themselves. It's already set up in this area. So if you've got a friend or a relative or even in your family that might need some assistance or be in a very vulnerable position if there's an emergency, get them registered. Go ahead and do that because they're ready to respond. The other thing that is extremely important is to create a list of emergency phone numbers. Who here has dialed 911? Anybody? You all? Ooh, that's so much. I've never thought about it. But I have discovered from the people who have, including a friend that just had her house burn, that you forget your name. And you couldn't for the life of you remember your address. So write it on the top of that list. You know, Linda and Dick Hayes, such and such drive. We laugh, but y'all, your mind can go blank really fast. So put it on there. Put the list. The other thing is, how many of you have forgotten what it was like to have telephone numbers memorized? I cannot tell you my husband's cell phone. I know which number to push and get speed dial. I couldn't give it out. I have a friend who has to open up her cell phone to tell you her number. You know, this is life. It's not that we're getting older. It's just a fact. Those of you who are younger than me could find that you can't remember either. So make a list. Your children may need it. You may be incapacitated, and a neighbor is going to realize that you need help and say, you know, say you fell in the yard and an ambulance came and took you away, and your neighbor said, well, I wonder who I ought to call. If you've got that list there, it knows son, such and such name, phone number, work, home. So this is just a good thing to do. My mother, I'm driving my mother's car. I inherited it, and I love it. But she had taped on the dash in a 5x8 index card emergency phone numbers. She wrote it in with a Sharpie, and it was duct taped to the dash of her car. She really was a little weird, but I'm thinking that's a good idea. And if I put that on my car, my kids are just going to roll because we made so much fun of it when my mother did it. But I'm liking that idea a lot more. So just keep it in mind. Next slide. Okay. This is your most important piece of emergency equipment. I want to see a show of hands of how many have a battery-operated radio and they know where to find it. Oh, wonderful. I had one, and I was giving a preparedness demonstration, and it walked off the table. And I have some more, and they're in a box somewhere that I have not unpacked yet. So this is the first thing. You need a battery-operated radio. It doesn't have to be fancy-dancy. This one that Don and Lynn have is a real glitzy one. It is hand-cranked. So if your batteries go out, you can just work like crazy and hear what somebody has to say. The reason this is important is that in the first sign of an emergency, your local TV and radio stations could go offline. And these little, remember the little AM, FM transistors? Do they even call them transistor radios anymore? What do they call them? Oh, digital. I don't know anything digital. That's, it's like a new word for me, and everybody uses it, and I don't really know what it means, but I guess I need to learn. But it picks up stations that are far away. I mean, it goes beyond just your local, and sometimes we're going to get information that comes. Do you all remember listening to Chicago? Well, maybe you have a different one, but when I was a teenager and lived in Chattanooga, really late at night, I could get these real cool Chicago radio stations, and they played music that was much neater than what I was allowed to listen to. So that's my experience with radios, but you want one. I want a different radio from this. I want a battery-operated, hand-cranked solar radio with the ability to plug it in. That is on my wish list. It may be my Christmas. But I am really excited about the fact that it doesn't matter what happens, I will have a radio. And so y'all consider, look at it, check some of your sites. But the idea of having something solar is just getting to be a nicer thought. Next slide. Pardon? It doesn't matter. I just found this out. We think it has to have direct light. It does not. All it has to have is sun. And you do have some sun. Even in cloudy, what I found out, this is this week, I found out it just takes twice as long to do it. That's nice to know that you can still use solar stuff. It won't be as good if you were in Arizona, but it will work. So it doesn't take direct sunlight to make this work. It just takes a while longer. I want to talk to you about home safety. Do any of you remember when you had these little checklists that you brought home from school about home safety? Did anybody do that? Okay, so I'm not... my children would do it, and they loved, Because you had to do it and take it back and say, yes, I did it, we did it. And then they're just nags. That pot handle is turned the wrong way, Mom. They look superior, and you go over and flip it. So these are things that the kids have started doing. But, you know, as we get older and the kids aren't there to nag us, we get into really sloppy ways. If you're in earthquake country, you need to have your hot water heater strapped to the wall. How many of you do? That's not 100%. It needs to be. Pardon? It's required by code here? Well, some of you slipped by. So you may need to think about it. It's not an expensive fix. Go ahead and do it. When I was working on planning a daycare center, I looked at more than code, and I wanted all my shelving secured to the walls, all of it. How many of you have got all your shelves secured with L brackets? Ooh, not enough. Y'all don't want to be in the way of a bookshelf toppling. So consider doing that. And go through that checklist and come up with ways to prepare your home. As I said, my friend just went through a fire. When she discovered the fire, it was a very small area by the dryer. She thought, I need to get the fire extinguisher. And remembered, the only fire extinguisher she had was what her dad bought when he bought the house 30 years ago. Okay. So she picked up the cell phone and her purse and left the house and called 911. She lives one block from the city limits. And it took a volunteer fire department to come. In that time, it escalated and did quite a bit of damage. But guess why it escalated? It was the paints, the thinners, the weed stuff. She had a lot of spray paint cans that were all stacked neatly by her water heater. Y'all, if she had had a fire extinguisher, her house would not have gone up like it did. It's all it took. So just keep in mind, you're supposed to have a fire extinguisher on every level of your home. You're supposed to have a smoke alarm on every level of your home near the bedroom area and one in the kitchen. I was typing this slide and mine went off. My husband was frying bacon a little too fast. And so I thought, this is funny. At least I know it works. So just keep in mind you need to have that. Get the fire extinguishers, you all. In an emergency that is more than just one house, the likelihood of a fire department being able to respond to everyone who has a need is almost nil. It isn't going to happen. I also live a half a mile from a volunteer fire department, and we have this little chintzy fire extinguisher. The other thing I want to share with you is that where you put them is important. Don't put a fire extinguisher above your stove. Why do you think that is? What? Most of our fires start because somebody just couldn't. There's a touchdown. Zoom, you know, there goes the chicken fryer. My husband fried chicken the other night. It was very good. It was the first time he had fried it. And memory doesn't go there. But he let the grease get way too hot before he put the chicken in. I mean, you know, you can't fry it once a decade and know what you're doing, and that's about where it's been. I don't fry it at all, by the way. So, you know, I know where the kernel lives and just drive right on through. So, you know, we Southerners may be known for our fried chicken, but as we get older, we discover that there are other people who do it better and easier, and that's what we use. The other thing that's just really important is, do you know where your water cutoff is? Do you know how to turn the valve? Can you? Do you know that if a man turns it, a woman might not be able to shut it off? Practice it. I'm serious. You need to know. Your children need to know where it is. If you've, even in, this is no disaster. What if your pipe breaks and you've got water shooting 8 feet up in your kitchen? What's the first thing somebody will yell? Turn the water off. What if you can't twist it? What if you can't reach it? My mother's was higher than she was, and she had a red stool, and she had a wrench hanging down so that if for some reason she, with arthritic hands, couldn't do it, she could use the wrench. Same thing is true with gas cutoffs and anything. Now, I'm going to mention something that maybe y'all haven't thought about, but what if you have a flood and all of a sudden you see brown stuff coming out of your tub? What could that be? Ooh, yes. Most houses do not have that cutoff. It wasn't code when it was built. It wasn't something they added. Y'all, this is a good emergency preparedness. I would put it right after the radio. You want to protect your home from that lovely encroaching stuff. So just keep that in mind. Okay, next slide. Okay, I think it was fire safety. Go back to that, if you will. Just take a quick look at it. How many of you have rope ladders on an upstairs bedroom? What if the stairwell was on fire? Could you get out? You could, but you'd break a leg. You know, we would do it. Y'all, they're not expensive. About $40 will buy you one. And it just hangs over the windowsill. And my mother got one, and it fastened. She bolted it to the floor, and we all laughed. So we were not really, you know, not at her that she could see. But we thought, how is Mother going to climb out of this window? And she must have heard us. She said, let me tell you what. If the flames are nipping at my fanny, I'm going to get over that windowsill. And so it was just, it was funny because in preparing this, I thought about it. And so just keep this in mind, okay, that if you've got an upstairs bedroom that you sleep in, you want a way out. So just keep that in mind. Next slide. Y'all, this is the second most important thing about your disaster preparedness. Phone numbers. In a disaster, no matter how bad it is, your phone isn't going to work because 20,000 other people are going to be punching those buttons and you're not going to get out. So you're not going to be able to get there. But you know what? You may be able to get Aunt Myrtle, who lives in Kansas. It will sometimes go long distance. So you have to have a contact outside. This is in your handouts. Go over it and look at it. Be attentive to this. There is nothing worse than not being able to contact your children. Y'all, there's no reason to think that an earthquake is going to happen at 3 p.m. on Sunday, where everybody's at home. You've got to know how to reach your child's school. You got to know what their friends' phone numbers might be. So just, this is the biggie. So be attentive to it. Next slide. On the table here, I've got examples of a 72-hour go back. When I came here, I was very upset that I wasn't going to be able to find... I'm used to saying, you need one of these, you know, or whatever. By the way, this is gold, a pocket knife, and on the end of it is a can opener. It's two for $1. It's a good bargain, so just keep this in mind. But this is Lynn's, and I'm not going to go over the list. You'll have it, and you'll have it on the web, and it'll be up on World for Jesus' site. So you'll have all of this. But after this is over, if you will look at it and just get an idea and think, oh, I never thought of that. I need to have a poncho. Have you all experienced any rain? You need a poncho in every single go bag. The other thing that we discovered when I was unpacking Lynn's bag is all these bottles. Well, this is the worst one. I don't know how they got them. It is so flat. This was all on the bottom. Do you know that we are saving the environment? That they have reduced the amount of plastic in these by 30%? It would be awful if your go bag got wet. And if you put 30 pounds on top of these and start shifting them around, you're probably going to find it. But take a look, and that's just my hint. Put the water on top and prevent some major leakages. Let's see, next slide. You need to talk about this in your family. Does anybody feel like they ought to prepare and are married to a spouse that thinks that's silly? Y'all are different in Seattle because you have these pending disasters. If you lived in Georgia, it would be a whole different thing. You figure the odds of a tornado coming down your street, not too bad. And besides, I live on a hill, and we can't get people to prepare. But you all know the danger. So just not only work on your plan, but rehearse it and drill it. If you don't know something, how do you know you don't know it? If you don't know something, how do you know you don't know it? If you don't know that you're missing something, you won't find out you're missing it until you need it. This is why you need the drill. This is why you need to look at all this, more than just the packing it at one time. The other thing that's important is design or designate a meetup place. Possible disasters are not going to happen when everybody's at home on Sunday. You got to know, if you don't have a cell phone, if nothing's working, how do you know how to find people? You know, I'm sorry. I couldn't go 3 hours after something major and not know that all my children were okay. Does anybody remember what happened during 9/11? Did y'all get any phone calls? The world picked up and dialed their closest family members just to know they needed that contact. They needed to know. We were not involved in that, and yet cells didn't work. Phones got overloaded just because people needed to connect. But what if there was a disaster and you didn't know whether your child was alive? They went to ball practice, and they're 5 miles away from you. How are you going to connect? If you have this and you've practiced and you've talked about it, you'll be able to connect. So I know this is in your notes, but y'all, you can't go further in planning until this is done. Next slide. That's the last one because it's usually the last thing we think about. I've got food for us, and we've got 1 week's worth of food for the dog. He prefers people food anyway, so I'm not too worried about it. But you got to think about it. Make provision for your pets. Next slide. Okay. You're going to produce a notebook. This is your disaster plan notebook. It's going to have the stuff in it that you do that we've just covered, written down, planned, and distributed. You're going to send a copy of all your contact to your out-of-town contact, to your children. You're just going to make sure it's there. But everything you're going to do from now on needs to be in a notebook, okay? And you're going to update it. And there's some really good websites. They're on in the very, in the back of the back at the end of the program in a slide, and I'll get them up to you. That you can get, not digital. Anyway, it is a downloadable emergency preparedness plan that you can put on your computer and type it in and change it as you need to. It's a really good tool. So you're going to need that. The other thing you're going to need is a spiral notebook because you're going to start getting ideas. You don't want it on pieces of paper scattered all over your desk. You want it in one place. And then I'm going to share with you what we're going to do for the worst stuff. You need, as you're planning, you need a month and week, monthly, weekly planner. Because you're going to start planning what to buy, what to prepare for the next little bit. And if you don't write it down, you won't do it. Inertia will take charge of you, and you will just find you've sat. So if it's written down, you can check it off, and then you can look and say, ooh, I didn't buy any toilet paper. And it needs to be on your list. You're going to have that, so just keep it in mind. And those are the two biggies, your planner, one notebook where you're keeping all your records before you get it transferred electronically, and then you're going to keep that calendar. Next slide. Fact of life. 1 gallon each day per family member. No excuses. None. All of us have ways of getting water. 1 gallon of water in my grocery store costs $1. You can pick up one a week and begin to stockpile. This is critical. Don't let this go. I fill every 2-liter drink bottle that comes in my house. I host a lot of prayer meetings, and we have a school of the spirit, and we have other things, and so people bring in the drinks from 2 liters. You wash it out, put the water in it. You can get a bunch of 2-liter bottles under a bed. You can just fill that thing. And what I would recommend is taking some duct tape and just going over the top, just in case, you know, you didn't screw really well, you have a flooded carpet real fast. The other thing is Seattle has rain. When do you have the most rain? Bad choice here. All the time. Okay. The roof catches the rain, and where does it go? Down the gutter, and then just into your yard. Catch the rainwater. If you can't get 55-gallon drums, which are expensive, get trash cans with lids and start getting your pile of water now. It's critical. You don't want to do that. Okay, so you forgot to get your 2-liter water under your bed. These are the ways that you can find water in your house. And usually they're listed. Don't forget them. I'm not going to go over it. But our water tanks and the water heaters hold a lot of water, and they will get us through an emergency. And If you didn't drop the little tablet in the back of the toilet, you can actually use that. As gross as it sounds, it's supposed to be drinkable. Blech. But if you're just, you know, it can be done. The other thing is, next slide, the other thing is dealing with unsafe water. Seattle doesn't have a problem of finding water. You may have to walk a while, but you're going to come across it. Know what's close to your house, because this may save your life. Just put it on a map, know how to get there, and just know that in an emergency you do have that water. But if it's not treated, you can't drink it. The best treatment is going to be boiling it for 1 minute. That's all you got to do, y'all, 1 minute. What they recommend is, if you're scooping out of a pond or a lake or anything that is stagnant, let it sit for a couple of hours, let the sediment drain to the bottom, and then just scoop it out, and then just pour that water through a coffee filter or a T-shirt or something like that, then boil it, and it'll be safe. And it just takes 1 minute of boil. Look at the bleach. This next slide. Cloudy water, you just double the amount of drops. That's it. So you've got that. The best thing that prevents really bad tummy reaction is a filtration bottle. They're expensive, and you may not be able to get one right now. But just keep it in mind that's you've heard of Berkey water filters. Am I saying that right? Finally. I've been calling them Berkeley. Yeah. Well, but anyway, those are good things, but they're expensive. This other will get you by. Next slide.